If we open back up to the fourth chapter of the second Corinthian letter, we'll pick up and close out this chapter, which is what we got started in last time we were up. We got down to about the seventh verse. As we went through the first section of the scriptures as way of kind of introduction, you know, we talked about Paul making the point that if our gospel be hid, it's hid to them that are lost. And we unpacked that last time and talked about what that means, what that state is. We talked about Paul's kind of mindset towards them. And we also talked about the fact that, you know, Paul was kind of making a point, you know, in our results driven society that we're in. You know, not that Paul is making excuses, but Paul is saying, hey, look, you know, it's not, if you're using that against me as a mark against my ministry, that somehow that I haven't had the converts that you think I should have, you got to understand there's some people who are lost at this present moment, and they're not going to respond to the gospel like you have, as he's, you know, talking to these people at the church at Corinth. And also he's making the point, which is hopefully what we will kind of get into this afternoon, you know, as you're talking about that, and probably a fallacy or something that has been perpetuated through the years, you know, people will make comments like, well, you know, if you believe in election, then you believe that God chooses who's going to go to heaven. And you believe that God has already made that choice. And therefore, you know, what's the point of evangelism? What's the point of preaching the gospel? What's the point of doing anything to them? And even on the flip side, what about all those people who aren't elect? And here you are preaching to them and calling them to repentance, and you know that they're never going to get there because they're non-elect. They're not chosen of God. They're going to go to hell. And here you are preaching to them. How cruel to preach to them something that they can't respond to. So that was actually amongst us and other people as a really good reason not to do any kind of evangelism. As a really good reason to, you know, to downplay going out and just preaching to people. It was as to downplay especially things like overseas missions. Those kind of things. It was, no, you just stay here. And ultimate conclusion is that God will born men again, and he will just bring them into the church at his discretion. And that you just sit here and you just keep meeting and keep the quote-unquote doors of the church open, and God will just bring them in. Well, I would say that's a nice little thought. It's not even a nice thought. It's an ignorant thought, and it has no Bible basis to it. And so anything that's not based in the Bible, we should be quick to shun if it's obstructive. And so, you know, in this case, Paul is making the point, and what we're going to see, he is making the point, there is a wall I'm hitting with some of these people because they're lost at this point. But there is a desire that Paul had, and it is something that the reason I'm bringing it up is because I want us to make sure we're getting on the right side of this, okay? That you don't just go, oh, well, I mean, if it's hid to those that are lost, well, then what's the point? There's no reason for us to be really pushing this matter or really, you know, pursuing this too much. We just kind of got to hang back and just let God do what he does, and then, you know, we'll pick up the riffraff as they kind of wander in. But that wasn't Paul's thoughts on it ever. And that's not what Paul's saying here. Oh, well, they're lost. Don't worry about them. Tell you what, let's focus really hard on y'all. Don't worry about them. They're lost. Give it up. They're done for at this point. We'll see them if maybe they come around. No, that's not what he was saying. He was making a point that, you know, just like as he made points over and over again, that you got to, sometimes he prayed to be delivered from wicked and unreasonable men, because not all men have faith, okay? So there was times that Paul recognized there's some obstacles that I'm going to face in my ministry. But he was never to the point where he said, I'll just leave them alone, you know, let them go. Don't worry about them. If there's children of God amongst them, when God gets to them and deals with them, then we'll take care of it, okay? He had a pursuit, a longing for these people, okay? And in particular, he's carrying this over from chapter 3, which is a direct tie and description of talking about lost people of Israel, okay? And if you think about that, all right, about Paul's desire to see these people come to the same knowledge, the same light, the same repentance, the same kind of the same place that all these other people he's preaching to. We see this, for example, as we kind of glancingly, you know, hit it on the way last time, you know, he makes a point. When you look at Romans chapter 9 and Romans chapter 10, Paul makes a point in Romans chapter 9 where he says that I lie not, my conscience also bearing me witness in the Holy Spirit that I have a great heaviness and continual sorrow in my heart. Why? For I could wish that myself were accursed from Christ for my brethren, my kinsmen according to the flesh, who are Israelites. To whom pertaineth the adoption and the glory and the covenants and the giving of the law and the service of God and the promises? Whose are the fathers, and of whom, as concerning the flesh, Christ came, who is over all, God blessed forever. Amen. Paul had this thing that he said was a continual sorrow. What was it? He's in his group of people, which would be the Jews. And he's looking around and he's realizing that as he describes there in those sections of Romans, there was a judicial blindness, a judgment of God on them. But he's seeing a group of people who everything has been given to. The adoption, the laws, the oracles, the prophets, all these things, so that the most logical people to respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ would be them. Why? Well, because they've been hearing about this thing for generations. And he's looking around and he's seeing a majority rejection of the very thing that has been prophesied about for, you know, 1,000 years or more. It's like, well, that's a sad state for him. This is his blood and sweat and tears. These are his people. Okay. So he's praying and he actually says, I wish I could have myself accursed for their sakes. Now that's a pretty bold statement there, wouldn't you say? That's something than just a little, like, little, what I'd call some preacher platitudes, okay? Come with some of those kind of like, I'll pray for you, but you have no intention of doing that. You know, we all do that sometimes. You know, we'll get out there and we get and say, oh, yeah, I'll pray for you. Yeah, I'm thinking about it. And then we're really not really tuned into the conversation. We're saying that because we know that's what our response is supposed to be. And then we walk off and we get in our car and we start thinking about whatever other 15 million things we do. We don't really, sometimes it's not, I mean, it's not good that we do that. I'm not saying we do it maliciously. It's just, you know, sometimes we're not as dialed in as we probably should be at those times, especially if you're at work or something like that, and you're thinking work stuff, and then people bring that up, and you're like, oh, yeah, I'll pray for you, think about you. Paul wasn't given that. He wasn't saying, oh, yeah, I wish that it would be this way, but I know it's not going to happen, and therefore I don't really care all that much about it. No, Paul says, I would even have myself accursed if that was possible. I would unelect myself for their sakes. He said, I would see myself destroyed in that sense for their sakes. He said, if it were possible, which is not possible. But he said, I would see myself accursed if it was from Christ for my brethren, my kinsmen according to the flesh. So, I mean, he had a vested interest in seeing. He wanted to see his brothers and sisters of Israel come to the exact same knowledge that he had. That's why, as you fast forward into Romans chapter 10, he makes the same statement. I'm praying for them. I want to see them come to this knowledge. So all this ties in. He did not have an idea in when he's talking about them being hid of like, oh, they're hid, lost, gone forever, good riddance, we'll see you maybe, possibly. No, he still desired that. He craved that. He prayed for that, okay? So I think that is one of the, as you're kind of looking at this, that is the right response to this, okay? The wrong response would be our lazy, selfish, elitist idea, which would be, well, we're in, you're out, and, you know, if you get in, great, but otherwise, we're happy where we're at. We're going to keep doing our thing, and, you know, if you get unlost at some point in time, well, then come on in, and we'll be happy with you. Now, Paul was a proactive person in regards to this. He was praying, he was weeping, he was sorrowful, he had sadness over this, okay? So he very much cared about what was going on with them. And that always makes me question, or at least makes me wonder, as far as with us and our hearts and how we, how we view things. You know, people all the time, they try to, again, it's this thing where you kind of flip-flop back into whichever ditch you want to go ahead and dig your head into. But, you know, we'll flip-flop back and forth and people will, get in these situations or they'll talk about these things like, oh, well, you know, we're not out saving souls. Like, you know, what we'll think about, you know, you're not getting people into heaven. You're not doing those kind of things. And so you get kind of this, if something is not rightly filled out, then you get in this very bad mindset. well, I'm doing nothing. We talked about all this with when we're talking about, you know, preaching and those kind of things. And we talked about that with, are we working hard or hardly working? Same kind of mentality. If you get way too far over off on one side, just get to say, well, what's the point? Why evangelize? You know, ultimately it is that case. God's the elect. God's the one that chooses. God borns them again at his time. Why would you need all? Why would you need to do these things? So I think it's important for us and what we have to ask our question, do we really care to see people believe, know, and follow Jesus Christ? Do we care about that? Is that something that we would like people to do? Are we sorrowful over or maybe our family who's not doing that? Do we sorrow over our neighbors who aren't that way? Do we care? That's something that we need to ask ourselves. Do we care about people who don't follow or know Jesus Christ in that sense? And I think what you find with Paul and the apostles and the leaders of the church, they had a care. They wanted to see people come to that knowledge. They had that hope that was within them, and they wanted to be able to give that answer to other people. They wanted other people to see the hope that was within them, and hopefully that they would see that hope. I think it's a selfish thing, and it's kind of what Christ talked about way back in the beginning in Matthew chapter 5, when he'd say, you don't take a candle and put it under a bushel. You want everyone to be able to enjoy the light around you, so you take the candle off. You don't keep it hidden in your closet and go, well, this is my candle and this is for me and this light's only for me and I want to get the pleasure of this light and I'm not going to let anybody else have it, so I'm going to put it under a bushel. I said, no, take that off. I didn't give you that light so that you could just hide it from everybody. I didn't make you the salt of the earth so you could, you know, take care of yourself and be salty for yourself and help yourself and then not have some kind of effect on other people. That's why he said you're the salt of the earth. Like, you are the salt of the earth. If you want to, like, you know, spread that out in some kind of ratio, or, and I'm not even going to try to get too technical with math because y'all know me and you know what my gifts are and what they are not. You know, you think about it from a ratio standpoint. Yeah, if we got, yeah, exactly. I'm having enough. It's hard enough as it is, just getting up here. But as you see with the ratio standpoint, if you look at us, if God just came in here today and say, okay, you guys, we in this church today, we're the salt of the earth. We're the only salt of the earth. Let's say if he said that. You are my salt. In Jasper, Alabama, you are my salt. So you know what the obvious conclusion by that is? Is that the rest of Jasper, Alabama is unsalted. And needs salt. Now, I'm fully and well aware, and thanks to the grace of God, that we aren't the only salt in Jasper, Alabama. Or else, man, we'd be in a rough spot. But what I get at is this. If that's kind of the address Christ was giving to his people there on the mountain when he was telling them, you are the salt of the earth. He's telling them, you're the ones that I have made and given the task to do this. No one else. I didn't say, oh, well, you're the salt of the earth, but don't worry about it. I have put some civil institutions in place and they will pick up the slack where you fail. Didn't say that. He didn't say, oh, you're the salt of the earth, but don't worry about it because ultimately in the end it all works out. And if you don't salt, it's not a big deal. That's just kind of I want to give you a little rah-rah speech and get you going. He said, no, you are the salt of the earth. I have called you to do that. I have created you. I have born you again. I've given you all the tools and all the equipment to do that. That's what you're supposed to do. And he says, and it's not just for you. It's not just for you to sit back in your little place, in your little home, and enjoy it all to yourself and not let anybody else. He says, it's not just for you. And that's what he kind of gets in here in the rest of this chapter. In verse 7, he says, but we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us. What treasure is he talking about? He's been going through talking about this ministry, as he says, in the first verse of this. Seeing we have this ministry, as we have received mercy, we faint not. So, in particular, as we said last time, the apostles have this specific ministry that he was referring to specifically. But then in the broader case, especially where he says in there that we have received mercy, he's telling people, have you received mercy today? Have you received mercy from Jesus Christ? Have you been born again and able to see Jesus Christ as your Lord, as your Savior? Have you been given that mercy? If so, you have this ministry. Same thing that Peter was saying. You have a hope within you. You should always be ready to give an answer to why that hope is there. What is that hope? Well, my hope is in Jesus Christ, okay? And so he says that we have this treasure in an earthen vessel. And what he means is that we have that ministry, we have that hope, we have that reception of mercy in this earthen vessel. And we understand by just very, you know, skimming the surface of any kind of medical anything, that this earthen vessel is not perfect. And this earthen vessel is weak. And this earthen vessel is going to break and rot and be destroyed. So he makes the point. He says, where is this ministry vested in? Well, it's not vested. God didn't pour it into these, like, strapping, impervious, perfect creatures that were to walk this earth in perfection. He says, instead, he gave it to us in this earthen vessel. Why? He said, because so that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us. Because any simple person can look and go, oh, well, and we've talked about this before. Oh, well, you know, I look at maybe Adam Kinsall 20 years ago, 10 years ago versus, you know, I have to, you know, it's getting to that point now. I have to start backing my dates up. It used to be when I first started, I could say, well, 10 years ago. And I got to keep, you know, backing it up a little bit. But if you say, well, Adam Kinsall, let's say 15 years ago versus Adam Kinsall now, then you have people go, well, there's something that had to happen. Okay. Some kind of dramatic event happened in his life. Why? Because you're looking at this earthen vessel and you remember how this earthen vessel used to be and then how this new ministry within this earthen vessel is. And you go, oh, well, it's not of Adam. Okay. Adam didn't create that. Adam didn't do that. That little weak, beggarly figure that he is, the scrawny little thing that can't even, you know, get up and touch a basketball net or anything like that. You know, that could not have been why he's where he's at today. He says, and that's the point. This ministry is within this earthen vessel that anybody in their right mind can look around and go, that earthen vessel ain't worth a whole lot. That earthen vessel doesn't have a whole lot of power in it. That earthen vessel can't really do these transformative things that this ministry has done. That this hope and this reception of mercy and those kinds, obviously there's something outside of this earthen vessel that has worked on it to make the person where they are today. So he says, we receive this in this earthen vessel. So you can walk around and go, hey, Paul, who more than likely had a physical handicap, as you read some of his, some of the writings, so there's things that he kind of alludes to that maybe he didn't, his eyes weren't that good, or maybe he looked kind of funky. Who knows? But his body in and of itself, you say, well, it's not the Apostle Paul. It's not Paul himself that's doing all this. It's not Paul that carries around this power to be able to be, you know, shipwrecked and bitten by snakes and all this stuff and still go on. That's not of Paul the man. That's of something else, something greater. And so that's why he says that this excellency of the power may be of God and not of us. We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. We are persecuted, but not forsaken. We are cast down, but not destroyed. Always bearing about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus, that the life also of Jesus might be made manifest in our body. For we which live are always delivered unto death for Jesus' sake, that the life also of Jesus might be made manifest in our mortal flesh. So then death worketh in us, but life in you. It says that this ministry that we have in the afflictions, in the beatings, in the distressings, in all these things that most people would say, give it up, let it go, it's not worth it. Why do you keep tormenting yourself? Why do you keep going through all this trouble? Why are you still persecuted for this? Why? What has God done for you that you would continue in this path? You know, it reminds me of a statement that the greatest helpmeet listed in the Bible, that would be Job's wife, And that would be sarcasm. her statement to Job, when Job is just absolutely at his wit's end, boils, eating him alive, you know, all this stuff. And what does she say to him? Oh, Job, keep the faith, brother. You are a model head, and I love that you are leading in such a godly, faithful, passionate way, and I'm right here by your side. No. Would love to have heard that, probably. But when all of his family has been killed, all of his livestock has been destroyed, people have burned his house down, and his even flesh is now eating itself, his wife comes up and said, Job, what's all this for? Why don't you just curse God and die? Paul is relaying to the Corinthians here. He's saying, look, guys, you know, I'm number one, you are our epistle. We are working and doing all this for you. You are the ones that... this is who we're working for. And yes, I've been traveling around and I've been beaten up and I've been distressed and I've been kicked and I've been handcuffed and shipwrecked and bitten by snakes and all these things. And all this has happened. I've always, you know, jokingly said, and y'all have probably heard me say it again, you know, to be shipwrecked and bitten by a snake. I mean, those are some things. And a snake, maybe not so much. A spider, it would have done me in, okay? If it had been shipwrecked and bit by a spider, then I'm like, I'm out. You know, punch the card, say, Jesus, I'm sorry. You know, that's why we believe in grace, right? But that's where Paul and all these things said, I'm doing all this for you. And if you sit here and look at me and you say, gosh, Paul, why do you still do this? I said, then I want you to look past Paul. I want you to look what's within Paul. I want you to look at this ministry that we have received mercy. So we faint not. We have received mercy. We have received strength. Well, how do you call getting bitten by a snake mercy? How do you call getting shipwrecked mercy? How do you call? We receive mercy. We have been given this. We have been called out of darkness into marvelous light. Why in the world would we give up on that? You know, Peter and the other 12, the 12 apostles, as they were talking to Jesus one time, you know, Jesus had just, you know, laid a bomb on all of his congregation out there about how there's just going to be some in the congregation who just, they're not going to get there, okay? You know, it's one of those deals. You're not my sheep. You can't believe because you're not my sheep. And he says, and at that point in time, there was a whole group of them, okay, of these disciples. Now, these are people who've been following him for 3 years at this point. All of these disciples who turned, and it says, at that moment, they walked with him no more. When he got to a hard spot, a difficult time, Jesus preached something that stepped on a few hundred toes, and they said, we're done with this. And Jesus turns to his apostles and he says, well, aren't y'all going to leave too? And what was their response? How could we leave you when you have the very words of life? How can we leave you when you have the very words of life? So when they would question Paul and say, Paul, why are you still doing this? Why are you going through all this stuff? Notice how every one of those little refrains has kind of a counter to it. Do we pick up on that? That's part of the kind of rhythmic, poetic kind of description here. That we are troubled on every side, but we're not distressed. That we are perplexed, but we're not despair. We're persecuted, but even though we're persecuted, we're not forsaken. We're cast down, but we're not destroyed. That comes with that verse, the verse out of that song, Vumalia, you know, that wicked men may lay in wait, but God's sovereign over the world. He'll keep us from being destroyed. So we carry on. And that's what Paul is trying to tell them here. He says, if you see all this, if you see all the stress we're going through, don't look at all that and go, well, why are we doing this? Well, I don't want that either. Well, let's just cash out and end this thing. He said, no, don't look at that. Instead, look at how God has kept us going. Look at how, yes, maybe we are cast down, but brothers, we're not destroyed. Look at how maybe we are persecuted, but we're not in despair. And even if our lives are taken, then we go to glory. There's a hope within that. See the light in that. See the joy in that. See the happiness in that. He said, so see that this earthen vessel is getting beaten to death day in and day out. But the inner man, as he gets into, he says, is renewed day by day. So don't get bogged down with all that and don't get overwhelmed with all that. And most importantly, don't look at us and go, well, I think. Now, this would be something that would definitely play into both their time and our time. Well, I mean, I just thought that if you were following Jesus, everything would be going well. Right? Yeah. I just thought if you were following Jesus, everything would be going well. Well, I mean, I go to church every Sunday, and I mean, I'm really good, and I don't cuss, and I don't drink, and I don't hang out with bad people. I don't watch R-rated movies. I don't do all this stuff. I'm straight-laced, Jesus. I'm 100% for you. So why is all this going wrong in my life? Why did I lose my job and then get my car totaled and then my house burned down or got hit by a tornado of all the random things? And why did all these bad things happen to good people when the good people are following the Lord? Shouldn't everything just be rosy with them? So you can imagine that people at the church are sitting there writing Paul going, Paul, I don't know if I want to follow this whole thing that you're talking about anymore, because look at you. I mean, here you are giving your life for Christ. You're going around, you're preaching the gospel, you're traveling all over Asia, and you're doing all these things. But look at what you're getting out of this. Why would I follow after that? Why would I pursue that? I mean, look at your life. I mean, I'm not going to knock you, Paul, but man, your life ain't that rosy, man. Well, we've talked about the shipwreck thing and the snake bite thing. I mean, come on. I thought that, you know, when I followed after Christ, it was going to be health, wealth, and prosperity, that everything was going to be good. He says, I want you to look at this, and yes, you see then death working in us, but life in you. Paul had a statement when he was before King Agrippa at his trial, actually, when he was getting ready to be shipped off and enjoy all these pleasurable things. He makes the point to tell Agrippa, he says, Agrippa, this is why I'm doing this, okay? Because here Paul is, hands in chains, standing before the king, and the king's going, now who are you doing this for again? Oh, I'm doing it for God. Well, the same God the Jews worship yet, but you know, we're worshiping Christ, the Messiah, who actually is the Son of God and the fulfillment of all these prophecies. And the Jews want to kill you, right? Yes, and you're arrested now, about to go to Rome, where more than likely you're going to be fed to a lion and die. Now, why are you doing this? And Paul recounts again his story as to what happened to him. He talks about Damascus Road. He talks about how Christ appeared to him and called him out and said, Paul, this is what you're going to do. He says in chapter 26, starting in, this is Acts chapter 26, starting in verse 16, he says, but rise, that's Jesus talking to Paul, but rise, stand upon thy feet, for I have appeared unto thee for this purpose, to make thee a minister and a witness both of these things which thou hast seen, okay, and of those things in which I will appear unto thee, delivering thee from the people, that would be delivering them out from his people and from the Gentiles unto whom now I send thee. He said, I'm going to get you out here, and you're actually going to get out more to the Gentiles than your people, but you're going to get out. I'm going to deliver you out of this. He says, for this purpose, to open their eyes and to turn them from darkness to light and from the power of Satan unto God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and inheritance among them which are sanctified by faith that is in me. Whereupon, O Agrippa, I was not disobedient unto the heavenly vision. And he goes on. He talks about how he ended up, you know, before King Agrippa. But you see the ministry that Paul was given. Said Paul, Jesus said, I'm going to send you out there, Paul, to these Gentiles who y'all hate and who you know, hate most of all. And yeah, I'm going to send you out there for this grand and glorious purpose. So when the Corinthians might question, say, well, Paul, why are you doing this? Paul, what's the point in all this? Paul, this isn't going very easily. Don't you think you should take an easier path? What if you just camp back out in a synagogue and you just, you know, translated the Torah a couple of hundred times? Wouldn't that be a better life for you? He says, well, but that's not what God called me to do. God called me to work. And God told me way up in the very beginning what great things I'm going to suffer for Jesus's sake. You know, some of us get really uncomfortable at just the idea of having to sit out in a hot Alabama weather for too long a period of time, okay? We don't like being uncomfortable. We stay out there too long. We want to come right back inside with the air conditioner. And if the air conditioner doesn't get down to 68 degrees, then we are uncomfortable. Well, Paul was told right off the bat, brother, you better just get ready for uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But none of it dissuaded Paul. None of it made Paul cause Paul to stop and go, eh, you know, really, is the cause all that grand? I mean, I know he said I was going to do this thing of bringing light to the Gentiles and all this stuff, but, you know, is it really worth it? Can't someone else do it? So he makes the point. He says, yeah, death's working in us. Doesn't have me down. Why? Because by my dying, you're getting light. By my dying and my suffering and my putting myself out here and constantly doing this, I'm bringing that light of the gospel. It says, we having the same spirit of faith, according as it is written, I believed and therefore have I spoken. We also believe and therefore speak. And he is quoting back towards a psalm in Psalm 116 that David writes. And it's almost a similar circumstance of David writing saying, here I am getting beat down, destroyed, torn up, all my enemies around me, all this stuff. And he says, but the Lord for all, or he says, what shall I render? This is Psalm 116, 12. What shall I render unto the Lord for all his benefits towards me? Now, this is after he's been talking about all men being liars and all the great afflictions that have been bestowed upon him. And he says, but what shall I render to the Lord for all his benefits towards me? I will take the cup of salvation and call upon the name of the Lord. He says, you may look around and the whole world may be pressing down and absolutely grinding you to dust. He says, but even in that moment, what's our response? He says, my response is the same response that David had. What am I going to render for the Lord who's blessed me with all these things? Well, what do you mean? I mean, here you are getting crushed by the world. The world would say, bow out, join in, get out of that affliction. He says, no, what am I going to do for the Lord who has given me so many benefits? He says, I'm going to take up the cup of salvation and call upon the name of the Lord. He said, basically, he's saying, I'm not turning away from this. I'm calling on Jesus. I'm looking right back to Jesus. When everything gets bad around me, I'm not bowing out and looking to Ricky Lake or Dr. Phil or somebody else to try to tell me how the alternate path is going to save me. No, I'm going back to Jesus because he's the one that did it in the first place. He's the only one that can do it. There's no other name in the world that you can be saved by. He said, that's who I'm going back to. That even when everything's going wrong, and in fact, when everything's going wrong, I'm going to go back to him even quicker. He said, because I know, ultimately 100%, there's only one place I can go for refuge, and that is Jesus Christ alone. So he says, for all things are for your sakes, that the abundant grace might be through the thanksgiving of many, redound to the glory of God. That even though we're suffering, we want to see y'all giving thanks to God for this. That ultimately from us, from you, it's all just rebounding and redounding and overly flowing to God. Not these weak vessels, not y'all's institution, not whatever. It's all in the glory of God, no matter how it plays out. For which cause we faint not, but though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. For our light affliction, again, that comes back from perspective. Say, oh, well, this doesn't seem like light affliction. Well, let's nail you to a cross. How about that? See how great that affliction is. How about you bear all the sins of the world? See how that affliction is. How about you be forsaken by the Father who you have spent eternity with? Let's look at that affliction and then see if perspective-wise, yours is just a little bit lighter. Even if you are being eaten by a lion, which I consider to be a pretty awful affliction, okay? Not something that I would look forward to. Do you look back at the accounts of men that faced it? And they faced it with a resounding faith in Jesus Christ. They got them through it. And Paul would say, these are light afflictions, which are but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. He says, perspective and view. Perspective and view. Where am I coming from and what am I looking to? Okay. Where am I coming from? What experience have I had and who am I looking back to? And then who am I looking forward to? Perspective and view. Because we look all too often at our lives and we think about the things that go on in our lives and say, well, what is all this for? You know, we have a verse that we don't like to say, or maybe we, jokingly talk about it and then talk about why you should never pray for it and all these things. But in Romans chapter 5, he makes a point to say that we should glory in tribulations. And that tribulations means a pressing together, a pressure, or an oppression. Okay? So if you ever feel like, quote unquote, you've had the world weighing down on you, tribulation. That's the Greek word that they're using there. Knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. So where are we coming from with all this? And what are we looking to? And hope maketh not ashamed, because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Ghost. He says there's a growth process from that pressing down. There is a growth process from that tribulation, which grows into more hope. He says, so as you're going through that, he says, don't sit there and say, well, this is just, this is out of sync with what I think modern Christianity should be. He says, no, it's part of the process. You're going to be oppressed. But don't look at it as some kind of vengeful wrath of God that maybe you're disconnected, or maybe it's because you didn't tithe enough last Sunday. Look at it and say, I'm going to be oppressed. Christ said I was going to have tribulations. But in all this, I know that even those tribulations are not something that's just null and void and just some cruel way God's pushing his thumb down on the ant farm, okay? He says, no, even in that, God, you're getting some hope. It's working through experience. It is breeding patience, which, as I've said over and over again, that's not sitting back and twiddling your thumbs. That's a steadfast constancy and endurance, a characteristic of a man who is not swerved from his deliberate purpose and his loyalty to faith and piety by even the greatest trials and sufferings. Like the best definition I've ever heard, okay? And that's what patience means, okay? That's what it means in the Greek there. So there's a growth in that. He makes the point that if you looked in Hebrews chapter 12, that he'd say, now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. So even in that, in our chastisement, God's not doing it just because he wants to crack the whip and get a little, sadistic joy out of that. He says, no, I'm doing it because I want to see some fruit come out of this. The same thing as we've said before in like John chapter 15. What does he say? If you're a vine bearing fruit, what's he going to do? He's going to prune you. Why? So that you'll produce more fruit. So in all this, in Paul's writings here to these, to the Corinthians, he's saying this is all, it's okay. It's okay that all this is happening. It's okay that I'm going through all these problems. It's okay that it seems like I've been shipwrecked and that my ministry's a failure because for some reason I'm not sitting in a palace in Rome and I've just got converts and all these people just flowing. He says, it's okay in this. This is not in vain. This is not purposeless. He says, in my dying, you're seeing life. By my diminishing, God is getting the glory. By this earthen vessel being destroyed, you're seeing the power of God shine through more and more and more. And I think that's a beautiful thing, because when we start getting beat up by the world and we start having the problems and the trials in the world just beat us down, if we would get back to the perspective of where we're coming from and the view of who we're looking to, then it gets back to seeing that the brokenness of the earthen vessel only lets the light of God shine out the greater if we're keeping our minds and keeping our vision on Jesus Christ. So people see you broken down, they see you cast down, they see you perplexed, they see you in despair, and in all those things you're looking though more and more and more to Jesus Christ, and they see that as well. And that is the answer of the hope that is within you. So I hope these things have been beneficial, and we'll continue to press on through them.